Cuomo Broadcast Center. This is Take Two. May Martinez. House Speaker Pelosi says they'll move on impeaching Trump if VP Pence doesn't act on the 25th Amendment by Wednesday. We'll hear what Democrats' game plan will be when they bring a vote to the floor and when exactly they'd send that article to the Senate for a trial. We're going to be joined by Los Angeles Congressman Jimmy Gomez. It's all ahead on Take Two. Stay with us. From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take Two. I'm Amy Martinez. Let's jump right into the show. Now, today, Democrats in the House, led by California's Nancy Pelosi, filed an article of impeachment against President Trump after his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol last week. Here she is speaking to CBS yesterday before moving forward on impeachment.
He has done something so serious that there should be prosecution against him.
President Trump is being charged with incitement of insurrection. Now, a lot of questions need to be answered, such as what is the evidence? How quickly will the article get through the House? And if the House indeed impeaches the president for the second time, when will it send the article to the Senate for a trial? Here to look at the full picture, we have Justin Levitt, professor of law specializing in constitutional law at Loyola Law School, and also Zach Corser, professor of government and co-director of the Policy Lab at Claremont McKenna College. I welcome you two. Now, House Democrats tried to make a resolution to urge Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment, but House Republicans blocked it, and there's been no hint that Pence has or is considering it. Justin, why do you think Pence will not act, at least for now, on the 25th?
I think it's probably a combination of his beliefs about what the 25th Amendment was meant to entail and a whole lot of political cover. The 25th Amendment was really most corely meant for physical disability. So temporary physical disability, the president's out of commission for some reason, and the business of government has to fall to somebody else. It certainly could be used for mental incapacity, but the sort of situation we're seeing now where the president's really a danger to the country isn't the sort of temporary thing that the 25th Amendment was really made for. On top of that, I have no doubt that Vice President Pence doesn't want to be the primary actor in deposing, essentially, his boss, the head of his ticket, and the person to whom he's latched his political train.
Zach, what do you think? Because President Trump essentially threw Vice President Pence under the bus last week. So why not go ahead with it?
Well, I mean, I agree with Justin. It's a little fraught. The 25th Amendment in Section 3 allows the president, him or herself, to step down temporarily. And the whole amendment is about suspending the powers and duties of the office of president and creating essentially an acting president and the vice president. It's not meant to be a removal. And Section 4 sets out a procedure where this can be done without the approval of the president. Again, like as Justin was saying, anticipating some kind of, you know, unconsciousness or some kind of medical disability, while some kind of mental disability could essentially be determined by the vice president together with the cabinet, this is uncharted territory. There's a somewhat back and forth process that goes between the president, the vice president, a majority of the cabinet, and ultimately Congress that we've never experienced before and would likely find itself in the Supreme Court, would likely see a vigorous resistance by Trump, and maybe a really difficult political and constitutional crisis of who was president at that particular moment. So it's by no means clear cut the 25th Amendment is going to solve any problems. It might actually create more.
Now, before we get to the impeachment charge, in order to get the House vote on Wednesday, Justin, will the House have time to do an inquiry or to have a hearing? They'll have to skip a judiciary committee, right? They'll have to take the article straight to the floor, is the understanding, right?
I think that's right, although they could go through the Judiciary Committee awfully quickly if they wanted. Okay. One of the reasons that people think it's possible to do something expedited like this is, unlike most hearings, unlike most inquiries, the evidence of misconduct, of impeachability, is all out there in the public. Like other actions by the president, this one was done in daylight. And everybody can see what the problem was. Really, the only question is a political judgment about whether it's the sort of problem that's worthy of impeachment. And that might help them move more quickly than they might otherwise.
Now, all right, to the charge, incitement of insurrection. Zach Corser, what can be presented as evidence of incitement of insurrection?
Well, so far, it's the president's own comments. It's a rather short article of impeachment that was introduced in the House. And it specifically cites something the president said on the day of that is considered incitement. So it's the president's own words, I think, that are key in evidence. I think, speaking of the article itself, it's interesting to note this: an argument is starting to develop now about the 14th Amendment and Section 3 of the 14th Amendment that was put in there largely to deal with former Confederates who had violated their oath to uphold the Constitution, that you could be ineligible from office, federal office, if you violated your oath to the Constitution. Now, this is something that has become something of a historical footnote. But the House right now in this resolution about impeachment includes a mention of the 14th Amendment. And it's a conversation that I believe is starting up within the House right now about if impeachment doesn't work for whatever reason, if he's unable to be convicted, that there may be some avenue through the 14th Amendment that could at the very least prevent Trump from running for president again.
Zach, what's your understanding with that? Would they have to attach it to the article of impeachment and send it to the Senate? Would it not be enforced unless there's a conviction in the Senate? How would that part work?
If they were meant to use the 14th Amendment to prevent him from running for office again, it would not be a part of the impeachment process. It would be some separate process. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be a charge per se. There would be need to be some kind of actor involved that the Congress could respond to, or somebody could respond to, where the president, for example, files for president again and becomes disqualified due to the 14th Amendment. But it's starting as a historical footnote, and I think unclear how this could happen. It's happened before. There was a representative from Wisconsin in 1919 who was expelled from the House for being a socialist, and the 14th Amendment was cited in that. But again, like so many things that are happening right now, this is uncharted territory, and I think it'll have to be left up to a political and constitutional process to discover what exactly the Constitution has to say on this question.
Justin Levitt, is there a First Amendment argument that his speech on January 6th, the president's speech on the 6th, his claims that the election were stolen, that is protected?
There's an argument for sure that Republicans have been making that speech is protected. I think it's an argument that doesn't hold much water. If we were talking about a criminal prosecution of the president for what he said on January 6th, and frankly, on the months leading up to January 6th, January 6th is certainly the trigger, but he had been lying outright and frequently about the election results for months before then, and that's part of what caused the problem. If we were talking about a criminal prosecution, there's a real question about whether the First Amendment might, in that sense, protect the president's speech. But impeachment as a political process, as a constitutional process, is about fitness for office and not about the proof of a particular crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think we can all understand that there is certain speech which would be protected against criminal prosecution, which nevertheless renders a president unfit for office. So the real question that Congress has before it in these impeachment hearings and these impeachment trials is whether the president's speech not is protected by the First Amendment against criminal prosecution, but whether it's rendered the president unfit for holding the office he currently holds.
Okay, yeah, because I was wondering, I listened to that speech and I was trying to listen for a call to action. The only one that I heard was when he told everyone to march to the Capitol and make your voice be heard. So I was wondering if they tried to attach the results of everything that happened that day to something he said. I didn't quite hear it, Justin. That's why I was wondering if one had something to do with the other.
Yeah, and in a criminal prosecution, there'd be a lot more parsing about exactly what was said, exactly the impact that it had, the causation of one to the other. But in an impeachment hearing, an impeachment trial, that's not really the standard. Impeachment is about, again, fitness for office. High crimes and misdemeanors in that sense is not about the criminal law. And it was very clear at the founding that it was never about the criminal law. Abuse of power was clearly a ground for impeachment. And you don't need the same sort of parsing if reasonable people would believe, if reasonable members of Congress would believe that the president's conduct leading up to and including the speech on January 6th caused a mob of people who believed that the election was stolen to try to overturn the election by overthrowing Congress, that, at least to me, is impeachable territory, whether you've got a particular sentence that triggers a particular action or not.
Now, one of our contributors on State of Affairs on Fridays, Carla Marinucci of Politico, just tweeted that Kevin McCarthy tells Republicans on a call just now that Trump told him he does bear some responsibility for the Capitol riots. Zach, how, if anything, does this change things?
Well, if you want to talk about McCarthy as leader of the House caucus, he's taken a position. He's been very quiet. First off, he provided really no guidance to members on Wednesday, particularly after the incidents in the Capitol, about how they should vote on the electoral votes of Arizona and Pennsylvania. And today his strategy seems to be pushing towards censuring the president. And maybe these comments from Trump are part of that. I think the political strategy right now is, how do we move Democrats off of impeachment and onto something less substantive and damaging? Censure really is just a statement by Congress. It has no legal effect. It could be considered damaging, perhaps, but it certainly has nowhere near the consequences of an impeachment. So maybe this is the first gambit in a play to try to push Republicans to try to push Democrats into considering censure instead of impeachment.
We're talking to Justin Levitt, professor of law specializing in constitutional law at Loyola Law School, and also Zach Corser, professor of government and co-director of the Policy Lab at Claremont McKenna College. Democrats control the House, and even some GOP members of the House appear on board for impeachment. So maybe that would happen quickly. But does that mean that the article has to head over to the Senate right away? Zach, what would Speaker Nancy Pelosi be factoring into a decision as far as when to send the article to the Senate?
It's a really interesting question. Yesterday, the Majority Whip Jim Clyburn had suggested that not only could they could wait as long as 100 days to send this over to the Senate, because yes, it's up to them to when they wanted to do that. And I couldn't help but maybe hear President-elect Biden's voice in those words, in the sense that I think the incoming Biden administration has a lot of justifiable concerns about dealing with the COVID crisis and vaccination, dealing with the economic consequences of COVID, portraying to the American people and to the world that the administration is working and competent and able. And I think there's some fears that if impeachment would draw into his administration, that it would take up time and it would take up space and that Congress wouldn't be able to deal with these other pressing issues. But it's really Congress's institutional concern. It's their responsibility. They're the ones who impeach. They're the ones who were chased out of their building during an insurrection that was incited by the president. And so it's Congress's responsibility. And they really have to weigh that, I think, with the concerns that Biden will have as president coming in.
Justin Levitt, I was thinking about the 14th Amendment. We were just talking about it just a few minutes ago. Could that apply to anyone who was, say, caught storming the Capitol? And we know that there have been videos of elected officials from different parts of the country that posted on social media being part of this crowd. Could that apply to anyone that was storming the building if they, say, wanted to run for, say, mayor or local congressman in the future?
Yeah, so the 14th Amendment's prohibition is very specific. It turns on specific offices. So it disqualifies you in the state of insurrection from holding certain federal offices or certain state offices. It's not clear whether it would apply to local offices. I think that the 14th Amendment, as Zach mentioned, was really designed for, that portion of it was really designed for Confederate sympathizers and soldiers during the Civil War. And it's not clear, it's never been tested, whether that sort of engaging in insurrection or rebellion like we saw January 6th would qualify. It's one of the questions that I think an attempt to pin that particular charge on members of the mob would have to confront later in court. I think it's extremely unlikely that Congress would decide, or any other actor would decide, that people in the mob on January 6th deserved 14th Amendment responsibility. Those who can be identified are going to spend some serious time in prison. And I suspect that that's going to be consequence enough for most actors in the system.
Really quick, just a couple of seconds each of you. Zach, I know all this can change on a dime. What's your best guess on what happens over the next couple of days?
Well, I think that the articles will move forward on Wednesday. They have the votes. Pelosi has said as much. But I do think it's an open question right now how quickly they will move in terms of assigning managers and sending this over to the Senate, because it looks like right now the Senate wouldn't be able to hear this until the 19th, and Trump will be out of office noon on the 20th. So just a lot of question marks ahead.
And Justin, really quick, you as well. What do you think?
I agree with Zach. I think what I'm going to be looking for is how many Republicans are on board. This is not just about President Trump. It's about Trumpism and the ability to lie to the public repeatedly in order to foster a real rebellion. And so a lot of mainstream Republicans are going to have to really confront their conscience about what they're going to do. That's what I'm going to be looking at.
Justin Levitt, professor of law, specializing in constitutional law at Loyola Law School, Zach Corser, professor of government and co-director of the Policy Lab at Claremont McKenna College. Justin, Zach, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
Of course.
More Take Two coming up in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Back now with more Take Two on 89.3 KPCC and on Apple Podcasts. I'm A. Martinez. In the wake of the violent attack on the Capitol last week, Silicon Valley has been taking action. Twitter put a lifetime suspension on President Trump's account. Facebook and Instagram have suspended his accounts through the inauguration. And the social media service Parler is all but dead. The app was an alternative to Twitter and was favored by many on the right, including some who used it to organize their violent actions last week. But the app was taken off Google and Apple's platforms and then lost its use of its server space on Amazon. The past 4 years have really put the question into the role of social media companies and, in light of last week's violent insurrection, their responsibility for what users say and do using their platforms. Joining us to talk about this is Kara Swisher. For years, she covered the tech world as a reporter. She hosts the New York Times podcast Sway. Kara, let's start with your big picture view of what Silicon Valley has been doing since the attack on January 6th. Several companies have restricted the accounts of the president and his diehard supporters. How do you interpret everything we've seen?
Well, I think they shut it down because he did an interview with me, which got him into a lot of trouble because the CEO, John Mates, really did the thing that you never do as a CEO, which is actually tell the truth of what's happening on your platform and then abrogate responsibility for the violence that occurred because of it. And so, you know, I think it's a really interesting question. A lot of people are trying to frame it as a First Amendment issue. It's not at all. This is a site that wasn't monitoring itself and proudly so. And then its site was used to incite violence. And so I think a lot of these companies like Amazon and Google and Apple really don't want to be in the business of helping terrorists organize, I guess. It's a pretty basic thing to me is this is not a good look for them. And so they've done this before on lots of other issues, whether it's child pornography or some other controversy, but this is a very similar thing. And they've been it's a very bright line around inciting violence. And so they have no problem doing this. So
let's get a piece of your interview with John Mays of Parler. You asked him if Parler bore any responsibility for what was happening. So let's play what he said.
Going into the Capitol building to do this, if it was organized on your site, what should happen on your site?
Look, if it was illegally organized and against the law and what they were doing, they would have gotten it taken down. But I don't feel responsible for any of this, and neither should the platform, considering we're a neutral town square that just adheres to the law.
And so that's the question, right, Kara, especially when it comes to any social media company. Are they a neutral town square,
No. Or
do they bear more responsibility?
Well, it's not more. He just said it. He said, if it's illegal, it's illegal to enter the Capitol the way these people did. I think it's pretty clear. And it's illegal to murder police officers. I'm pretty certain that's illegal. And so this is just sort of a feint by them and saying, we'll take it down if it's illegal. But they didn't take it down because it was illegal. And so it's sort of a roundabout things. And what I spent a lot of time in that interview doing is he kept saying false things. And I said, that's not true. And he goes, well, some people feel this. And I said, you know, feelings aren't facts. I don't know what to tell you, you know, and I think, and I think he hadn't been pushed as much and he didn't really have a really good theory of the of his case there. I think what they're trying to do is throw up these terms like First Amendment and neutral space, when in fact, there's no such thing, you know, restaurant, you know, you can't have a hotel that lets people organize assassinations in and then say, you know, that if you know about it, that it's happening, that you had nothing to do with it. You just can't.
Yeah, but back to the president really quick. I mean, we've seen the president's rhetoric over the years. We've read it. We've heard it. We know what he's capable of saying and inciting. So were these recent moves by tech companies too little too late at this point?
Oh, I think so. I've been bugging them for years. You know, this has been one of, I mean, people would at some point, are you ever going to stop? I go, no, because we're going to have something terrible happen. And a bunch of things did happen terribly, the way he used Twitter. But at this point, he moved over into illegal territory very clearly. He was taking steps that were incredibly questionable and definitely violating the rules of those platforms, but they let him off. You know, they kept let him off, not even with a parking ticket. The parking ticket was when they labeled him, right? Which he got furious about, just a simple label that perhaps his election nonsense that he kept posting was true. So that bothered them. But then he crossed over a very bright line, which is inciting violence. There's plenty of hatred that went on for a long time. But inciting violence really is a very bright line for all these companies. And even though they're capricious about their enforcement, that one they always enforce pretty quickly. And that's what they did. It's pretty basic. I mean, honestly, the way that his supporters are going on about this, I lost 50,000 Twitter followers. Too bad. Five people died. Now, give me a break. Give me a break.
Now, Amazon cited your interview when they announced that they were kicking a Parler off of its servers. And Parler is now suing Amazon. If they can't get back on Amazon servers, though, Kara, could Parler, with its billionaire backer, Rebecca Mercer, just create their own server so that people can use the app again?
No. No, that's the thing. Like, they, you know, they said we had, again, with the non-truth, I'm not going to say lies, but they're lies. They were like, lots of people will host us. Well, so far, and then he came back and said, okay, lots of people won't. A lot of people don't want to do business with a site that it doesn't care what's on its site. That's just the way. If he wants to live this way, he's got to live this way. And that's the issue. Now, they can possibly get a lot of money and do this. And other companies have. Gab did this. They went to another group, finally, after getting shut down by, I think it was Amazon. I'm not sure who shut them down last time, but a lot of people did. And they got back up. But yeah, sure, they can do it. And it takes a lot. It takes a lot to do so. You can't just instantly do so. But most of the big platforms, and what's interesting is he's trying to sue them on an antitrust basis. The one area that has so much competition is this cloud space. You know, you have Microsoft, you've got Google, you've got Amazon, you've got IBM, you've got a lot of companies, none of whom want to do business with Parler. And that's the problem he's got. But he can build it, sure, but it'll take a long time.
Wondering, Kara, the First Amendment, at least to me, has always seemed pretty clear. Why do you think there seems to be a fuzziness around it in the last few years?
People can't read. I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's a really short amendment and it's the first. So you should be able to understand it. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. It really isn't. There's only five things on there. And one of them is what it says very clearly is Congress shall make no law abridging. I'm paraphrasing, abridging of freedom of speech. And now Congress, that's pretty clear who Congress is, right? It doesn't say Twitter shall make no law. It doesn't say Facebook shall make no law. It doesn't say Snapchat shall make no law. It doesn't say anybody should make no law. And so that's what it is. It doesn't say that anyone gets to say anything without consequence on private platforms that are not public squares. You can do it in a public square. And by the way, what's fascinating about this whole First Amendment thing is, you know, Donald Trump acts like, I can't talk on Twitter. Well, you know what? He has a podium in his house, actually, that's jacked into every single media organization in the world. I think he has an ability to say what he thinks. And he the reason he likes Twitter is because it's an unfettered access to people where we can elicit reaction without any kind of pushback. The problem is when he goes into, you know, that's why he's doing all these videos without any press there. Because anytime he gets pushback, he gets into the, you know, inject disinfectant area of the problem he has, and it makes him look crazy. And so that's why he likes rallies, because there's no pushback. There's only love. And that's why he likes video, because there's no pushback, only video. And on Twitter, the same thing. There's pushback, but he doesn't have to. He can ignore it. And he can have an unfettered, he just can't be impeached. I don't hate to use that word on those platforms.
Kara Swisher, longtime tech reporter, host of the New York Times podcast Sway. Kara, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
All right, coming up next, Los Angeles Congressman Jimmy Gomez on what the House plans to do, how they plan to do it, and what happens going forward, considering a new administration is right around the corner. Jimmy Gomez coming up next when Take Two continues. Stay with us. Back now with more Take Two on 89.3 KPCC and wherever you get your podcasts, I'm E. Martinez. As we've discussed today, Democrats in the House are mobilizing this week to try and remove President Trump from office following the attack on the Capitol last week. They have a couple of options. One, they're trying to convince Vice President Pence to enact the 25th Amendment to remove him. The other is they can try to impeach him for a second time. The House has drafted an article of impeachment already charging Donald Trump with incitement of insurrection. Among the backers of these efforts is Congressman Jimmy Gomez. He represents California's 34th district, which includes downtown Los Angeles, Boyle Heights, and Koreatown. And he joins us now from Washington, D.C. Congressman, what's the mood on Capitol Hill today?
The mood is determined. We're determined to remove this president one way or the other before the inauguration day. We see him as an immediate threat to the United States institutions, to Congress, and to our way of life. But we are determined, but we're also very sober of what we're engaging in. The acts that were committed last week are starting to sink in with, I think, even more and more with the American public, how violent it could have become, even more so, and more loss of life. And we already lost one police officer. So we're determined to hold this president accountable because he is a danger. And that's one of the first things that ran through my mind as I was fleeing the floor of the House of Representatives.
Yeah, Congressman, when you say we, is that you, Democrats, and some Republicans?
Correct. One of the things I want to make clear is that there are some Republicans that also view this as this president as no longer fit for office. Some of them will back it. I'm not sure how many, but we have some people that will back the articles of impeachment.
Now, today, Democrats introduced a resolution calling on Mike Pence to begin the process of enacting the 25th Amendment. You attempted to pass it by unanimous consent, but Republican Congressman Alex Mooney objected. Given that over 100 GOP Congress members voted last week to object to the results of the Electoral College, I have to figure that maybe you weren't surprised. So why try on the 25th Amendment?
I think one of the things is that we want to give Pence, Vice President Pence, as well as the other cabinet members, a chance to do the right thing, and also to show the American people that we are not rushing to articles of impeachment. That and we're trying to do this as a unified front. It's not easy because a vast majority of the Republicans in the House of Representatives were backing the insurrectionists. So they were. Some of them were antagonizing the insurrectionists to do more. So we're not surprised, but we want to show the American people that we're taking this step by step. But by Wednesday, we should. My hope is that we pass articles of impeachment if Mike Pence does not act.
So you feel, though, it would be a rush, though, either way. If Pence doesn't act, you are rushing to introduce the article of impeachment.
No, are we rushing? Some people wanted to do it on Thursday and Friday. This is actually the appropriate timing. We're acting because we do believe this president is a direct threat. When I was on the floor of the House, I just want to be very clear. When I was in the gallery, I wasn't on the floor. I was in the gallery, and when we locked down the House floor and the chamber, all I could think about in the immediate aftermath was just kind of like, is this the end of American democracy? Is this the end of our country? And then we had to start running and we had to protect ourselves. Let me be clear. If the insurrectionists would have been successful and stopping the transition of one president to another from a free and fair election. Donald Trump might have been president for another 4 years, but what's to say that they couldn't have done it in 4 years from now? Or say, you know what, we're not going to have an election. That's what's at stake, is actually our republic is at stake. And that's how severe this situation was.
But considering that the vice president hasn't given any indication or seems at all willing to consider invoking the 25th Amendment, why wait? Why not just, as you said, do it last week?
Because it's been determined that we want to give the Republicans, and not all the Republicans, but the Republicans of good conscience, an opportunity to fulfill their constitutional duty to protect our republic. And I think that is a fair step to take. But the clock started ticking today as the resolution was introduced. And if he doesn't do it by tomorrow night, we will be voting on articles of impeachment by Wednesday.
What is possible, though, in terms of impeachment? Practically speaking, Republicans are in control of the Senate still, technically. Mitch McConnell has said he's not bringing any of the senators back before January 19th. So then what can be done?
Well, it's not I'm not a senator and I'm not in charge of the Senate. So we have to just take the steps that we can control. And what we can control is our action to vote on articles of impeachment, that this president does not deserve to stay in office a single day more. In the end, history will judge their actions and judge the actions of the Republican and the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, for what he does or does not do. And I could tell by the look on his face when he was speaking on Wednesday night that he knew that by placating this president since November 3rd, that they were also partly responsible. So it will be on them if they decide to take it up or not.
Now, House Democrat Whip Jim Clyburn has suggested for a way to work with the Mitch McConnell timeline. What did he suggest?
What I've heard from you from news reports is that he suggested to hold off until sending the articles of impeachment, but that's not anything that has been decided. The caucus is 222 members coming from all walks of life having debates, and we have to try to build a consensus on something so monumental, and that's what that discussion is going on. There is that support to pass the articles of impeachment on Wednesday, and that's the action we're going to take. I'm pushing to send over the articles of impeachment right away. Other members are not. But I think that either way, we have to take that first step, which is impeaching the president.
Because even President-elect Biden has asked Congress about splitting days between impeachment, confirmations, and also passing his own agenda. So wouldn't things get a little bit clouded, especially considering that President-elect would probably want to have some of the nation's attention on him and what he plans to do?
Yeah, and I totally respect that. But Congress is Congress is an independent branch of government. It's up to us to decide what course of action we take. I fully respect President-elect Biden. He's the leader of our party, and he's going to be the leader of the United States of America. But it's still up to Congress to determine the steps that we take when it comes to holding seditionists and insurrectionists accountable.
Are you worried at all, Congressman, that taking action against Trump could lose steam if you, say, wait the 100 days that Jim Clyburn is suggesting?
There are folks that have that fear. I don't have that fear, but we need to continue reminding people what this mob tried to do. They tried to stop and overturn a free and fair election based on a lie that this president has repeated over and over and over again. So we have to remind people that if they would have succeeded, then we would have had a president, not only just for another 4 years in Donald Trump, but maybe for life, and that the experiment of American democracy would have come to an end. That's what happened on Tuesday. That's what we beat back on Wednesday, and that's what we beat back. It is serious. And I want people to understand how serious it is. No, we're not going to let this slide. We're not going to let people forget. If the Republicans want unity, they first must admit that Joe Biden is the rightfully elected president of the United States, and nobody stole anything from Donald Trump.
We're speaking with Congressman Jimmy Gomez, representing California's 34th district. Congressman, assuming that the House does vote on Wednesday on the article of impeachment, how confident are you in security, considering what we all saw? Because the eyes of the world will be on the Capitol building again on Wednesday.
Yeah, no, definitely. Of course, I'm concerned. I'm a rank and file member who got stuck in the gallery. It wasn't even easy to get out. I had to crawl under 11 different sets of handrails. I had to lay on my stomach for God knows how long. It felt like forever. Of course I'm concerned, but our democracy must go on. And I'm going to show up just like my colleagues and vote to impeach this president. We know that it is our duty to continue the function of government. So despite a lot of the trauma that the members and I not only witness but experience, we're going to move forward determined because of our love of country and our love of the oath that we took. Just on January 3rd, we got sworn in on January 3rd, and then by January 6th, we were dealing with this insurrection. So signing and taking that oath of office means so much more today than it did even on January 3rd.
Have you been back to the Capitol building? Have you been back to the House floor at all, seen what it looks like in there since then?
I stayed around. I was so committed to going back and finishing our job. I went and I stayed until the last state was certified on the House floor. So I didn't leave the...
Hello, Congressman?
The House floor until Thursday morning at...
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. I got you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I went back and I actually stayed on the House floor until about 4:30 that morning on Thursday. I went back on Thursday afternoon to pick up some items from the House office building. I was a little upset to see finally barriers being erected, which at least they're now being erected. But I was a little upset about that just because of the lack of planning. And also what I want to be, I just want to stress, I know there's some folks about the Capitol Police. There are some Capitol Police that definitely need to be investigated if there's any dereliction of duty, if they were involved in some way and be held accountable. But other Capitol Police, the ones that were holding of the line against, you know, 10 to 1, 20 to 1 against them, the ones that were in the gallery with me, the ones that physically got assaulted, beat up, you know, they're heroes. They stood the line. And just like all Republicans aren't bad, all Democrats are bad, all these Capitol Police, a lot of them did their job. But the ones that didn't, there'll be a full investigation and they will be held accountable.
That's California Congressman Jimmy Gomez representing California's 34th district, including downtown Los Angeles, Boyle Heights, and Koreatown. Congressman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, focusing back on LA from DC for a minute, because there's still a pandemic going on and there's still lots of news about vaccines and also testing sites. We're going to get the latest with our own health reporter, Jackie Fortier. That's coming up when Take Two continues in about 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Tu cabeza.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. I'm E. Martinez. The number of coronavirus cases has gotten so severe in LA County that health officials say every minute, 10 people test positive. But on top of that, concerns about the accuracy of some tests used here locally, made by the company Curative, have pushed county officials to stop using those tests completely. KPCC's Jackie Fortier has been following the story, as well as when and where the vaccine might be available to those who aren't healthcare workers or at high risk. Jackie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, remind us why the county stopped using this Curative tests at their county sites.
Yeah, last week, the Food and Drug Administration issued an alert that one of the Curative PCR tests poses a, quote, risk of false results, particularly false negative results. So in other words, the test may say you are negative even if you have the virus. Now, county health officials say out of an abundance of caution, they will stop using the Curative tests at their testing sites and switch to a different test. Curative tests only made up about 10% of the tests used at the county sites, so this isn't really a big switch. Congress actually also used the Curative tests, and they have stopped as well.
Now, sites run by the city of LA, however, are going to continue using the Curative brand test. Why? If the county pulled its use of them out of these concerns, why is the city still doing it?
That's a good question. As far as we know, the city of LA will continue using the Curative tests. They haven't really given a solid reason other than they think that they're accurate. And it's important to remember that these tests still work. The FDA notice doesn't raise any concerns about false positives. So if you've had a Curative test and it's positive, then you have COVID-19. And all of these tests have some level of false negatives. I mean, no test is 100% accurate.
Now, we should not have to remind our listeners of this, but we are going to. Even if you have a test that's negative, regardless of who made the test, it's not a pass to go visit grandma or to go visit your friends, right?
No, not at all. Again, no test is 100% accurate. If you have been exposed and think you may have the virus, please go get tested. There's really no problem with false positives. So if it says that you have it, then you do have the virus. And it's also important for everyone to remember that a negative test isn't this get out of jail free card. There's still a chance that you could have it even if you test negative. So you need to stay home away from other people for 10 days. Don't go out. See if you develop symptoms. If you do, call your doctor. We have widespread transmission. Folks should, of course, be wearing their masks and only hanging out with people in their household.
And to hit the nail on the head about the need to practice safety, no matter what a test says, Jackie, tell us what county officials said today about area hospitals and the stress that they're under.
This is the worst the pandemic has ever been in LA County. Health Director Barbara Ferreira called the current widespread transmission and overrun hospitals a disaster. I've never heard her use that term before, but she said that today. Many hospitals have set up triage tents outside to keep patients from flooding the emergency room, especially those arriving in ambulances. Intensive care beds are full. They've been full for weeks now. Now they're putting patients in overflow areas like emergency rooms, operating recovery rooms, even in some cases, the gift shop. One hospital administrator told me they're now putting 14 more beds in their auditorium. And like you said, every minute, about 10 people test positive in LA County. Hospital staff have been working for weeks during overtime shifts trying to treat these incredibly sick patients, most of whom have COVID-19. That's why we need to do everything we can to help them. Stay home as much as possible and really only see your household and, of course, wearing a face mask.
Can't believe we're still saying that, but yeah, I guess it's best we say it so that in case someone says, no one told me. Okay, there you go. Now, it's true. I can't believe it's been almost a year, but I guess it's still important to say it.
And at the same time, I go out every day for a walk and I see people not wearing masks.
Me too. But I bite my tongue now, Jackie, because I could get into a million arguments all day long on this, so I bite my tongue. Now, in other news, LA City's coronavirus drive-through testing site at Dodger Stadium will end as of today, so the city can transform it into a mass drive-through vaccination site. So, Jackie, how many people per day do officials expect to be able to vaccinate?
Yeah, they estimate up to 12,000 people will be able to be vaccinated at Dodger Stadium every day once it becomes a vaccination site. But keep in mind, it won't be open to the general public for vaccinations. It's for healthcare workers for the next few weeks.
Okay. Are there concerns that moving or removing a big testing site will maybe impact Angelino's access to testing?
There we are. Dodger Stadium and then a VA testing site will also cease testing today. And these two sites run about 87,000 tests per week. So that's about a third of the total testing capacity in the county. We heard from county health officials that they're looking at helping to add more testing in other places since it was the city's decision to transition Dodger Stadium to vaccinations. So yes, there is a concern, but we really need to get more people vaccinated. That is the goal.
Yeah, the hope is that it'll speed up the vaccination process. Mm-hmm. Just 2 hours ago, the county gave us an update on that, and it's been really slow moving. So remind us who's eligible to get the vaccine right now and the rate it's been going.
Yeah, so it's actually part of the reason why Dodger Stadium will be transitioning to a vaccination site. Right now, only healthcare workers can get the vaccine, and we've moved through acute hospital workers, EMTs, and paramedics. They were first. Now, a much broader category of health workers can get vaccinated, people like dentists and lab techs. Health officials said today that means vaccinating close to 800,000 healthcare workers in this broader phase. So we need these big vaccination sites like Dodger Stadium and another five sites that the county is going to set up week after next. County health officials estimate that everyone in phase 1A, so that's all these healthcare workers, will be vaccinated by the end of January, provided, of course, that they can get enough of the vaccine because everybody needs two doses.
Okay, so that's 1A. Who is in 1B, and what did officials say about when those people can get the vaccination?
Yeah, 1B is going to start looking like people outside of healthcare. It's not available yet. People over the age of 75 are in 1B, and people who are at risk of contracting COVID who work in education, childcare, emergency services, and food and agriculture. These were categories set up by the state, so it's not unique to LA County. County health officials say they'll start vaccinating 1B in early February, again, provided they have enough of the vaccine.
What should people keep in mind when getting the vaccine? From how fast it works to whether you should still wear masks. I mean, it's not a magic wand. You still should wear stuff and be smart, right?
Yes, exactly. Both of the vaccines okayed in the U.S. require two doses a few weeks apart. So after you've gotten the second dose, it still takes a few more weeks until you have the full protection. So Pfizer, for example, that vaccine is 6 weeks after the second dose. It also looks like people who have gotten the vaccine can still pass the virus on to others. So stock up on your masks. You're going to keep wearing them for a while. The vaccines are safe. The data has been reviewed by multiple scientific bodies. And when you get your vaccine, you'll need to stay at the vaccine site for a while so they can monitor you for side effects. They are rare, but they do happen. So you'll have to hang out for like 20 minutes and maybe brag on social media that you got the vaccine. And of course, this is going to take months in order to get everyone vaccinated. We've already seen that. So keep wearing your masks and keep socially distancing.
All right. That's KPCC health reporter Jackie Fortier. Jackie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are a million and one ways that you, the Take Two listener, can interact with your favorite public radio show, Take Two. There's a million and one ways. First off, you can hear everything we do wherever you get your podcasts. There we are, waiting to be heard by you. You can just download the full 49 minutes if you want to take a long walk or a long bike ride. Either one works well. You can also break down the segments individually, like Jimmy Gomez, the congressman from Los Angeles. You can just hear that as well. You can also contact us through social media. We're on Twitter at Take Two. That's at Take Two. I'm there as well, at A Martinez LA. That's at A Martinez LA. That's good for Twitter and Instagram for your social media convenience. Thanks for listening. Thanks for trusting us with your time. Take Two is back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.